And 3, 2, 1. All right, we're live. We're live in the podcast, bro. Let's talk about some UFC
and smoke some weed. All right.
Did you see the scientist that said apes' brains were developed by doing shrooms?
Yeah, man, like totally. I think that's real, man. Too. I don't believe in God, but like,
yeah,
I think that apes were getting high and that made them into humans. That's way more plausible to me. Way more plausible.
Yes. I mean, the Bible sold how many copies? But yeah, this is legit. God's not
way
real,
more
but
plausible.
The monkey thing. Oh yeah.
The stoned
anyway,
ape.
That was a terrible Joe Rogan impression. The wording, not the dialogue necessarily, but the voicing was bad.
He should call his whole podcast The Stoned Ape. That should just be his thing.
That's not bad, really.
No, right? Kind of a cool name,
I think,
but it's pretty appropriate for Joe Rogan.
I started smoking weed when I was 35, so I know a lot more. I'm more mature about my weed smoking than most people.
I just remember
are.
Joe Rogan with hair on, what was it, News Radio or whatever, with Phil Hartman.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then Joe Rogan on Fear Factor.
Man, Phil Hartman, that was a funny dude. He really genuinely was. He had some great impressions, man. I miss that guy.
Yeah.
I guess
he was somebody who
guess
could,
he had
like,
messed up real life.
He could be Phil Hartman, but also, like, it's like Phil Hartman was a character even beyond Phil Hartman. I don't know.
Right.
He was funny.
No,
it was always
mean.
Like Phil Hartman doing
mean.
An impression. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't just
right.
Like Phil Hartman's doing an impression. It was like Phil Hartman is doing an impression of Phil Hartman, who's doing an impression of whatever the person. You know, I like the caveman lawyer.
I forgot about that.
I may not know how your world works, but I know that my client is innocent. Yeah, Geico kind of stole that from Phil Hartman.
Well, I mean,
I guess it wasn't a lawyer. I guess they weren't. It was wasn't a caveman lawyer, but it was kind of the, it's kind of the gist of it.
Sophisticated caveman.
Yeah.
That was back when SNL was actually funny.
Right.
They had some good.
Yeah, well, you know
stuff.
What? It was, but I remember back then thinking that it sucked. You know, I remember thinking back then that it was like funnier whenever it was like Bill Murray and. You know,
but yeah, it's gradually gotten less funny over the years. But back, you know, even in the 90s, you could watch it and still sit through it.
Everybody
and laugh
still,
and
it was a priority still to watch Saturday Night Live even back then. Because, I mean, looking back on it now, I mean, you had Chris Farley, David Spade, Adam Sandler, Norm Macdonald, I mean, Tracy Morgan. I mean, there was like so many. So many funny people.
And the writers weren't deranged leftists.
Right.
Or they might have been, but they didn't like throw it in your face constantly.
I heard, I can't remember who it was talking. Oh, one of the conservatives. It was one of those conservative comedians like Nick DiPaolo or something. I don't think it was actually Nick DiPaolo. I don't remember who I was listening to, but they were talking. Oh, it was what's his name? Ari or whatever. He was in Dirty Work with Norm Macdonald. What's his freaking name? He's on Howard Stern all the time. Fat guy, real funny comic. Oh man, I keep wanting to say Ari Fleischer, but I know that's not right. I know that's the Bush guy.
I
think
it was
his name.
It was Ari Fleischer. He was in Dirty Work.
Arlie, God dang it. Anyway, it was the fat guy that's in Dirty Work with Norm Macdonald. I'll have to look it up, but
right.
He was telling this story, and he was talking about that there was this one of the writers on Saturday Night Live was a conservative, but he was like, you know, he was one of the original. You know, guys like that they had the whole Lampoon thing. I think it was at Harvard, because that was like where Conan went, and there was all those guys that wrote for that ended up getting out of college and writing for SNL. But this guy was a writer, and he'd done a lot of the Bill Murray movies or whatever, and so he was well established. But Horatio Sands, for whatever reason, just wouldn't do. He just never thought that guy's stuff was funny, just because that guy was a conservative. And he was just talking about how Horatio Sands wasn't really that funny, and he was just kind of a dick. It's interesting, man, to know kind of the backstory on people, because, you know, you see like Jimmy Fallon, and he's kind of made this career from being like the semi, I guess, like semi cute guy that's always laughing. He's kind of the funny guy, but whatever. I'm just Jimmy Fallon. But then you like hear that he's like this raging alcoholic in the like in reality. He had this his hand was bandaged up for like months. I don't watch it, but my wife does, and she was like, I still like, what is that? Well, they said he broke his hand on a table, a glass table or something. And it just turns out that it happens a lot, that he gets hammered and injures himself like badly, and they have to cover for it. You know, I think that stuff is great, but
it's kind of like the back when I used to watch Conan O'Brien before he got so crazy. Like, he would always say Max Weinberg, the drummer in the band, you know,
right.
He was like, you know, if you've ever watched it, you know how he is. They would always like go into like this thing talking about how he was just, you know, this like dirty drunkard guy. And in real life, apparently
he's a madman.
He is like he's a raging alcoholic, because he played with Bruce Springsteen's band for a long time. And I guess he's like a big time alcoholic, like crazy guy. And he looks like the guy that goes to bed immediately after the show, and he drinks water and eats all this.
Those are like the guys. He looks like one of those guys that's like super possessive about his girlfriend. Like, he's like, never wants her to talk to anybody. She can't have any friends. I don't know. He always seemed like he was funny to me, but Bruce Springsteen, man, what a tool. What a tool that guy. And yeah, what a guy he turned out to be. Douche. Bruce freaking Springsteen. Springsteen.
I don't think. Whoa. String bean.
Yeah, I
don't think he should be able to sing Born in the USA.
Nah. He shouldn't be able to.
Even though he may have been.
I
just think
he should be able to do whatever he wants to do. But I just think that most people should tell him to go fuck himself. Because, you know, it's like you don't get to be this. I don't know. I'm not going to go on a celebrity rant. You know, people make up their own minds of what they, because I could go on all day. At the end of the day, you know, it's one of those things like I have to be careful of it. And this is something I think that people deal with, because it's like, you know, Kanye West, I sit and I watch things and I legitimately will get angry and think, man, I cannot believe that people are like trying to make fun of him and trying to because he doesn't want to buy the narrative. They want to put him down. They want to all the ridiculously racist crap that they say on CNN about him. And the left has turned him into a laughingstock because they're terrified, really, of what he's doing. And the fact that he's giving black people sort of an option, or at least making them think twice. And even though a lot of the people that are in that, you know, kind of mainstream culture are coming out against him, he's doing a lot. I mean, the guy still has millions of fans. But it's interesting, because I have to watch myself. Because it's like, I'm cheering this guy on, but if Kanye was just coming out and saying all the generic Trump stuff, I'd be telling him to shut the fuck up too. You know, I have to be careful. Like whenever I hear one of these famous people that will come out and say something, see, I try to distinguish, because if it's like, if they're just coming out and they're saying stuff about Trump, I put them in a couple different camps. Okay, I guess more than two, but I put them in a few different camps. There's the people like Snoop Dogg who have a million pictures with Trump and Snoop Dogg. Snoop Dogg loved him some Trump until, you know, he ran as Republican. And so there's all these celebrities that have ties with Trump. They know he's not a racist. They know he's not a bigot. They're playing the game right now. There's those people. Then there's the people that don't have any connection to him, that don't really know anything about him, but they are on they hate Trump because they know they have to. They don't have any other choice. If they said anything different, they would just never work again. You know, and then there's those people that are actually trying to have a political impact. You know, they're working against Trump because they're working at all times for the Democrat Party. You know, so it's kind of different level of these sort of useful idiots. And I think a good policy to have is like, if you know somebody is they're just on the hate Trump bandwagon because they think it'll be good for their career, but they don't know any better. It's like, you know, let those people say whatever they want. Now, if they take the route of insulting everybody who supports Trump, well, then I think, you know, I think it's different. Now, I don't think that necessarily they should suffer any consequences except for that the free market should, you know, people should not support them. But the people that I really have to look at are people, and Bruce Springsteen falls into this category, of people who are actively working for the Democrat Party. They're Democrat Party operatives. They're also, you know, whatever they are, but they put a lot of money in and they use every bit of their star power to, you know, promote the Democrat Party, even though they know who the Clintons really are. I mean, they know. Those people all kind of know about each other. And that's what we've talked about it before, but that's kind of the funny part about how they all came out against Kavanaugh. He's a Boy Scout compared to the stuff that these people do on just a regular, like, Thursday night. So, you know, how do you, Dave, sort of balance the passions of the time, where, you know, if somebody comes out and says something negative about the president just because they're, you know, whatever, and you go, that person should never work again. How do you balance that with getting upset when somebody that's a liberal says that Kanye should never work again because, you know, he's saying the things that set them off? So, you know, how do you kind of balance that?
That's a good question. I mean, it's kind of like what, you know, and I don't really know. I honestly, like Hollywood and all that stuff, I really could care less. I think it comes down to any other business. If you're producing something that people want, they're going to come buy it or watch it or whatever. But when you step out at and start alienating, I guess you'd call them customers in a way, and start saying that, in this case, maybe let's say it's more than half in my opinion, but we'll just say half for argument's sake, is one political affiliation and the other is another political affiliation. When you get out there and you start putting your opinion out there, whether no matter which side it's on, I mean, you're going to piss some people off, you know?
Right.
And that, I don't know it. I mean, ultimately I just don't care about Hollywood and stuff. I've been so just burnt out on these people that have you know, somebody like Jennifer Lawrence who hasn't really, you know, done anything but made a lot of money since she was like, I don't know, 16 or 17. And,
well, and she's one of Harvey's girls, too. She's one of Harvey's girls.
And tries to tell people that, you know, this is the right way and this is the wrong way about people's lives, you know. And, you know, meanwhile, there's guys, you know, working in a coal mine or working in a plant, you know, looking at her like, well, what the hell does this chick know? You know, she's just some girl that's had it made for several years now, you know.
Well, and
she didn't know shit about my life.
To that point, it's almost like they're useful idiots because they're doing it. Right. They're only helping, you know, they're sort of helping people to go, you know what? I think that, I'm not going to listen to Jennifer Lawrence or maybe anybody like her. It's interesting though. You know, I think there's sort of different levels that these people, you know, it's just hard. It's hard to balance feeling, you know, kind of loyalty and seeing people. What I think compounds it for me is that a lot of these people that I just am disgusted by now, I used to like. I used to be fans of. And that's the thing that I wish that Hollywood and these people could understand that, you know, it's like I can know that somebody's a Democrat and I can disagree with them without having to insult them. But you know, it's increasingly like these Hollywood actors that are such ardent liberalists, the only way that the Democrat Party operates is by avoiding debate. And so they just sort of paint the people that they disagree with them as racist or bigots or you're homophobes or you're xenophobes or whatever. You don't see that really from Republicans. You see kind of a want to debate because I think that most people that are conservatives feel in their gut that they're right. And usually when you feel like you're right, then you'd love to debate it. You'd love to, you know, if you feel like you're a better basketball player than somebody else, well, then you love to play him, you know, because you know you're going to win. And that's probably a bad analogy, but the left is on the one hand, they're self-righteous, but they don't have, it's like that Tim Pool guy. I watched a little video today where he was talking about the NPCs, you know, the sort of genius. I don't know if it started as a meme or whatever, it's grown to become so much more. But it's kind of the answer to a lot of the liberals on Twitter and Facebook calling conservatives Russian bots. Well, you're just a Russian bot, or you're just a racist, you know, this or that. And it was interesting because the way Tim Pool was talking about, it's like he was talking about these people and he goes, you can see them when you go out to a protest. And they're very passionate, and they're chanting about how much they hate Donald Trump. And then somebody goes up with a microphone and asks them what exactly about Donald Trump don't they like, and they look at them like they're from a different planet. You know, that's what an NPC is. An NPC is a non-player character in a video game. It's somebody that only has certain lines of dialogue, so they can't interact beyond, you know, if you're a player in a game, then you can interact with somebody freely in that aspect. But a non-player character is just like somebody who gives you information about a certain part of a game, or they act out the same thing every time they have the same generic responses. And so, but this has really bothered the liberal cucks at Twitter and Facebook and, you know, Reddit. And they're doing everything they can to ban these NPCs because it's one of these things that there's and this is one of the things that Tim Pool was talking about, was that it's not that people on the left don't laugh, but there's such a restraint. There's so many things that you're just not allowed to talk about. Gavin McInnes had this thing where he was reading rules that they're giving in certain nightclubs of like, well, you can't say this joke unless you're this, and you can't joke about this stuff unless you're, you know, gay or whatever. It's ridiculous. And on the right, there's just no restraint. There's kind of this irreverence, like whatever, nothing is off limits. That's how the comics, you know, back in the day, the people that were truly funny, black, white, whatever, Richard Pryor's or Eddie Murphy's or, you know,
Gallagher.
You know, but, you know, I'm trying to think of the I can't think of anybody's name right now. I'm turning 38 tomorrow and I'm showing my age because I can't think of anybody's name. But all of those comics that just broke boundaries and they talked about race and they talked about sensitive issues in a funny way. And it really did bring people together to be able to look at something and have everybody kind of laugh at it. And you can't do that with the left. They, you know, the only people that can make jokes about it are the people that don't think it's funny. You know what I'm saying? If the only people that can make jokes about gay people are gay people, well, they don't see themselves the way everybody else sees them. And that's not to say anything bad, but it's like, what if you were the only person that made jokes about yourself? You have a certain perspective. You see yourself in a certain way, and it's kind of funny when somebody that's sees you, you know, that sees you from a different perspective than yourself makes a joke about you. It's like, oh, you know, I never thought about that, but I do, you know, I do that. And it's not anything bad. It's not any kind of an insult. It's just, you know, comedy. There's a reason why comedy veers into politics so much, because it's, you know, comics have a really interesting way of telling stories and putting things, finding a new perspective that you're like, oh, buddy, it's funny because it's true. Yeah. You know, but
that's why Blazing Saddles was such a funny movie.
Yeah, you couldn't make that movie today.
You know, because they made fun of racism, you know, and people today, there's so many people that have never heard of that movie that if they watched it, you know, their heads would explode. They would probably freak out or feel guilty or that they were watching it or something.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't make that movie today. There's a lot of movies that you couldn't make. There's songs that you couldn't hear. There's even comics like Chris Rock. He couldn't do some of those bits that he did back in the 90s now. And he's kind of turned into a kind of an SJW whatever, which was it's kind of a bummer to see, because these people really put a unique perspective. And Louis C.K. was kind of the last one of these guys that didn't give a shit and just said all the words you weren't supposed to say and joked about it, and people loved him for it. And then, you know, everything finally came to a head, maybe literally, I guess. Wow. But, you know, it's just interesting. It's interesting how politics has invaded everything else and is sort of like sucking the joy out of it. You know, politics sifted into football, and now a lot of people just don't watch it anymore. Politics has seeped into clothing brands to where people, you don't wear a certain thing if you don't think a certain way. Politics has gotten into music, and it's gotten into movies, and it's just in everything, and you can't escape it. And the people that come out and say, well, that's it's all tribalism, are some of the most tribal people out there. You ever talk to a truly so-called intolerant leftists. They're the most, or excuse me, tolerant. These people that preach tolerance are the most intolerant people. They won't tolerate anything but their own point of view. And you know, how do you ever talk to that person? How do you ever find common ground? They're not interested in common ground. They're interested in people that think like them. And if you don't think like them, so I don't know. You know, I feel like we're back into what I was doing in the episode, the last episode that I did by myself, where I was just pontificating. And we've had some problems with the past few. Dave and I have worked it. Now this is like the fourth time we've tried to record, and we've had some problems with the software and with different things. But so it's all a trial and error. But I did I did get some feedback. I don't think I mentioned that one in this podcast, but I did get some feedback from a gentleman who said that I shouldn't talk about what I want to be. I should just be. And it's good advice. Whoa. Hey, what can I say? We're that's what we need here. Positive feedback. I'm going to get an email going. I think I'll do like glennkeck2020@gmail.com or something like that. I don't know if I use Gmail. I don't know what to use for emails. That's another thing. Google is they, like, what is like how I have a smartphone that the government could, you know, track me on. I have iPads and a computer. I've got a smart TV. I have an Alexa. I mean, there's a billion different ways that I can be surveilled. And it's like, well, at what point are you willing to sacrifice convenience to go through the trouble of not using any Google products, not using anything that has any kind of listening devices? And really, at the end of the day, does it make a difference? If I stopped using anything that I thought the government could track me on, would they not just be able to still probably get me from this, all the shit that people use around me? You know, you're at this point with technology where it seems like the idea, well, of their listening is like, I'm just hoping that I don't have anything that they're interested in hearing. I know that politically they're not interested in hearing anything I have to say, but you know, if they were listening to us through our Alexa, then they would probably be pretty freaking bored. And
you go.
She's chiming in here. It was weird. This was weird. Here's something. The other day, I was trying to get, because I've seen stuff on like Steven Crowder where he was asking his about Jesus, and she had some weird stuff to say around Christmas time. So I was asking the other night just random questions. I was saying like, Alexa, who should I vote for? And what do you think about, you know, this or that? And she didn't really want to give me any real answers, but she asked me if I wanted to talk to a chat bot. And she said, this is through some, I don't know if it was Stanford or something. Somebody has developed these chat bots. And so it was a chat bot, and it was basically trying to take stuff that I said and use it to you know, have a conversation. So if I made a comment about a certain person, then she would try to talk about that person or whatever they're related to, or if I was talking about a food or something like that. And so she said, who do you think, what woman do you think has had the biggest impact of politics? And I just wanted to mess with it. So I said, well, I don't think any woman has had that big of an impact in politics. And I don't know that one. You know, that's her default. I don't know that one. And I said, actually, you know what? I think that, what's her name? Susan, Collins. I said, you know, I think Senator Susan Collins is a real American hero. What do you think about her? And she starts telling me like jokes about her, like negative political jokes, jokes about the GOP, how they're all in the locker room high-fiving after Kavanaugh, like real snarky shit. And even my wife, who's not a conservative, she goes, I can't believe she's saying some of this stuff. And I was like, I got to record this. And so I pull out my phone and start recording. And I don't know if, like, you know, she was cycling through certain stories and whatever, but as soon as I turn my phone on, it's totally different. She's like trying to change the subject and talk about combos. Well, combos are breaded circles that are filled with a different filling. And it was weird because she kept going back to combos. So, you know, it's obviously, we know
Alexa likes combos,
right? Well, or she's trying to sell them to me. I have been wanting combos ever since we had that conversation, so it's worked. But, you know, so Google and Amazon and all these companies have a Facebook. They have a pretty strong liberal bias. They're going to do everything they can to help out with the midterms. They're sort of infected in our lives. And, I mean, if you think about it, if Gmail can scan our emails and they're just looking for keywords, then they can tell, you know, basically who is what politically. It would just take probably a pretty cursory search through most people's emails to kind of find out where they lie politically. And so Gmail, Google, these people, they know a lot about us. And we know that they're interested in affecting the outcome of midterms. So that stuff's going to be important. But what do you think, Dave? I mean, is there a point that we're going to have to say if we're, you know, if we're conservative, that we're basically going to have to operate our lives without the benefit of modern technology because the people that are owning it are potentially using it against us? Or is this something where, you know, the cat's already out of the bag? The only way to really be competitive in today's world is and for your kids to grow up and be able to be sort of fluent in the language of technology. Is this something where you just try to work within the system, or is there some point where we're going to have to sort of break away and find alternate? Because it was interesting. I heard somebody talking about DuckDuckGo the other day. And they were trying to install DuckDuckGo, and the app told them that they should install it on their Google Chrome browser. And, you know, it's like, I've liked DuckDuckGo, but that seems kind of counterintuitive. You know, are they able to make sure that Chrome's not, you know, gathering the cookies and whatever, tracking the information? It's just, you know. What do you think the answer is?
I don't really know the answer. I guess it would just take time to see how they do things. I think the more they go down this road, and I mean, I talk about Twitter, Facebook, and Google, all the big guys. If they keep going like they're going, you know, I feel like more people will just leave it, or it'll be kind of a goof off thing. You know, the one that really concerns me the most is Google, because Twitter and Facebook are just social media sites. And I know social media is huge, but to most people, they could live without it. You know, if they wanted to, it wouldn't bother them. But the Google, there's a lot of other, that's a whole other ball of wax. Because they have a lot of apps and things people use for, you know, they have like free Google Drive has like Excel and PowerPoint. Not a lot of people and businesses use that. The thing about Google is they've been also developing. If you if you look up Project Dragonfly by Google, that's where a program they've been working on with the Chinese government to basically gather information on their citizens and then socially score them based on anything from what they buy, their, if they pay their utilities on time, you know, it, basically anything, any sort of data they can gather about a citizen, and then they socially score them, or the government socially scores them. And, you know, I don't know what they would use it for. I would assume, you know, the lower the score, the less of a citizen you are, maybe the less of the benefits you get of being a citizen, maybe less rights. I mean, that's a communist nation over there. So, I mean, there's no telling what the scores may imply. But I just think, I don't know, I just wonder if that's kind of a, in my opinion, it's kind of an act of treason that an American company is working with a communist country.
Well, and on the one hand, you know, it could also be looked as kind of a test run.
Right, because that's what I was getting
it,
to.
It's like,
yeah.
If
it works there, how hard would it be to implement over
well,
here?
Well, yeah, I mean, what, they have like over a billion people over there. So, I mean, you know, they're going to be implementing it on a pretty big scale. So if you can do it there, then yeah, the difference that you would have is there's probably, a lot more people there's a lot more people in this country who aren't going to really stand for that type. And so you're probably going to have resistance here. That'll be a big difference. But, you know, if you think about it, I mean, if they just decide at one point to cut your access, what are you going to do about it? I mean, if you're part of a network of people that are spread all over the country and all over the world, and they just cut your access, you're completely isolated and that network doesn't exist anymore. So there's a lot of ways that people operate now that they wouldn't be able to operate. I mean, let me ask how many people out there would be able to get from one place to another if you didn't have your GPS on your phone or in your car. You know, would you be able to find a place that's far away from you by going and buying a map? Like buying a physical, actual map, would you be able to turn by turn take yourself, you know, to a place by following directions on a map? There's a lot of ways that if there was, and see, I don't think it's a far stretch. This is really the thing I think that people need to get a little bit more focused on and get a little bit more awake about. From all the things that the Democrats are saying right now, it's not a real far step from what they're saying right now to implementing something like that, cutting, you know, just taking the internet away or putting it on a heavily restricted level and justifying it by saying, well, there's just a, you know, because think about it. Let's say that they don't do real well in this midterms. Let's give them even the benefit of the doubt. Let's say that they take the House, but we hold the Senate. And so whatever they can muster in the House, but the Senate will still be able to continue to confirm judges. They'll be able to push certain bills through because the Senate, it can ratify a lot that's going to the House. I know it goes back to the House, but if so let's say that happened. Then let's say that Trump wins in 2020 and there's another 4 years of Trump. And however Congress is able to move in that time, but let's just say for conversation that Republicans can keep control of the political apparatus. They continue to pack judges in all federal courts. And it lasts till 2024. Let's say, because in that scenario, if Trump got reelected, let's say that Trump is popular enough that like Mike Pence or Lindsey Graham or somebody wins 4 years after him, kind of like what George H.W. Bush did after Reagan. But then let's say after that, the Democrat gets back in power. And they're looking at the fact that conservatives had 12 years of packing the federal court. Probably the Supreme Court would be mostly, you'd probably have the two liberals that Obama appointed. But, you know, Ginsburg and whoever else go. And it's probably only two liberals on that court, so it's mostly conservative. Once they step back into that, the way, if this country keeps at sort of the fever pitch it is now all the way through that, which all this stuff is very hypothetical, but if you see Democrats taking power after being out of power for a long time, and there's a big wave of it, like when Obama came in and had all three branches, I don't see them wanting to ever give power back. And I can see them at that point, you know, if they were able to, and really, man, I don't know. It's probably even, now that I laid out this big hypothetical, it's probably more plausible, like, if they were able to win in 2020. That, to me, because of the atmosphere, if they were able to win in 2020 and they already had the House and they were able to win, you know, the president, have the office of the president, and they were able to have at least the House, and the Senate was real close, I could see them moving towards authoritarianism, because they don't want to be civil. They don't want to work. It's interesting, because I actually think that Trump would be a president that would be willing to work with Democrats. I really honestly think that if Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, and they went to Trump and they weren't just trying to play games for their constituents and get reelected, if they were really trying to make a difference and make America better, I think Trump would work with them. I think that he's shown a willingness to work with anybody who wants to work with him, no matter if it's people from other countries, people that have said this, said that, been enemies of his. He's, when they want to make a deal, he's right there. And I think the Democrats could easily make a deal. They're biding their time. It wouldn't take much. If you control the internet, you know, you control a lot. Because then it would turn into community by community, and how you could even organize within your community without having really access to the internet. People would have to go back to kind of the old school stuff. And if you controlled the internet, you'd be able to control a lot without even really having to use military force, you know. So it's a powerful, powerful tool. And there's nothing right now in the rhetoric of the Democrat Party that says they wouldn't go that far. Actually, if you asked probably your not probably your average Democrat, but you're politically active, kind of passionate, definitely to the far part of the left, that they're going to tell you, and I'm not even talking about the extremist. I'm just talking about probably your normal politically active college kid. If you asked them, would you be okay with restricting access to anybody identified as a conservative on the internet, they'd say, hell yeah, I am. They're already calling for that type of stuff. They're already shutting down major cities. This kind of stuff, this is no joke anymore. And then what happens? So it's very precarious. It's not something that we can afford to go, well, they're doing it over in China. And for China, I don't know, I like saying that, but I've seen things where there's been some congressional committees that have had these Google engineers in front of them and asking them questions about it, and they're like politicians the way they sound. It's kind of rough. I don't know, you know, but it's something that I think that we have to continue to do. To look forward and to take everything one step at a time. And right now, the next thing is the voting on, what is it, November 8th?
6th.
November 6th. See, I don't even know what day you vote on. Voting on the 6th of November is, it's going to be a big day. I think there's going to be a big push by the media. I don't think they have an October surprise. Here's something relevant in the news that I was reading today. Stormy Daniels lawsuit against Trump. Now, it's not the only thing. There are some other parts of this case that are being litigated. But the one of the big lawsuits that Stormy Daniels had brought against Trump for like defamation was struck down, and Stormy Daniels was ordered to pay Trump's legal fees, which I like that part. and it was interesting because what the judge ruled was that Stormy Daniels had presented herself publicly as a political opponent of Trump. And so what she was suing him for was she was saying that it had negatively affected her that he said she was lying about the affair and that he had attacked her, you know, personally. And so the judge said, look, you have acted like a political opponent. And so if I were to tell the president that he was not allowed to respond to you with, I think he called it like, what was it, like rhetoric and hyperbolous rhetoric, I think he called it, then he would be sort of hamstringing the office of the president and basically saying that the president couldn't attack any of his foes politically, and that's just sort of the name of the game. So I like it. That's one blow for these guys. And this Avenatti guy, he got on Twitter the other night and made a prediction that Trump was going to be indicted by like the end of this year, and that he guaranteed it, and he's on a winning streak. And if you don't believe it, look at his winning streak. It's like, I don't know, buddy. How do you consider the whole thing that happened with Kavanaugh part of a winning streak? I thought he was supposed to have like a video of Trump that never surfaced. He was guaranteeing that Trump was going to be indicted like months ago. I mean, he was guaranteeing that Cohen was going to be indicted, and I don't think he was indicted either. So, you know, this guy claims he's on a winning streak, and he's empowered by like CNN and MSNBC, who I guess they have like a little pup tent out back where this guy crawls out of either that, or he seems like somebody who's like leasing a Honda Pilot, and he's probably also sleeping in it. Whenever he's not bunking it up with
him and Wolf Blitzer share a flat somewhere.
Hey, Wolf, can I crash at your house again? Yeah, sure. Come on, Avenatti.
I'm not doing shit. No one likes me.
Are you sure that you're not just a different part of my personality?
I like the way I don't listen to Michael Savage very much anymore, but I'll have him on sometimes, and he calls him Wolfie Blitzer. And the way he says it, I don't know. Something about a little, the way a New York kind of Jewish sounding guy says Wolfie Blitzer just cracks me up.
Well, imagine that your parents name you Wolf Blitzer and you wasted it. Like, that guy is none of the above.
If should I was have been a football dad, player be like, man, or something.
We should have named you Pup Blitz or something. We should have named you Ballerina Blitzer. I don't know. That was not Donner very well thought out. There you go. That was better. Ballerina.
Adolf Blitzer. Adolf Blitzer.
Don Lemon and Chris Cuomo took turns trying to make fun of Tucker Carlson, because and this was something I tweeted to I'm shadow banned. I think I've been shadow banned even on top of my first shadow ban. So not many people see my tweets anymore, but I tweeted out, yeah, well, I guess when you can't even kind of imitate his ratings, you're going to have to try to do a bad imitation. Like, it was funny because it was an article put out by Mediate or whatever, and it was very highly ratioed, where there was like way more people that were talking about how stupid it was and how they had no respect for either one of those guys, and how it was like not even a really good impression. So they can't even make fun of it. But it's just, man, it's sad. Like they prance around and get so offended if anybody says they're not professional, but they're a joke. Don Lemon makes all these racist things about Kanye. It's like, whatever you think about Kanye, he doesn't deserve to be, you know, said all these really disparaging race comments by Don fucking Lemon and Chris Cuomo. Well, Chris Cuomo wasn't a part of that, but it was like Bakari Sellers. What they do is they get a bunch of black of these like elitist liberal African-Americans. They get them around Don Lemon and they all say a bunch of racist black shit. And we're supposed to go, oh, that's okay. They can say that because they're black. It's like, no, man. You know, if there's going to be a standard, there's going to be a standard. If you're going to say this is what happens when Negroes don't read, I mean, I think Bakari Sellers is what happens when Negroes don't think for themselves. You know what I'm saying? It just makes me sick, man. Those guys they're cucks. And it's like Don Lemon is married to a white guy. He does a lot of white, hateful, you know, whatever. But if you want to see...
He's very white. Well, he's almost as white as Sean King.
Right. Well, it's like if you want to see... if you want to see Don Lemon, like... sort of be what he truly is. Watch the one they have Morgan Freeman. He's probably had him on more than once, but Don Lemon has Morgan Freeman on, and Morgan Freeman is not buying all of the bullshit about how, you know, black people, just the whole system's against them and it's not their fault. And Morgan Freeman's going, bullshit. You know, I was born in Memphis, very poor, my family, and, you know, I'm a millionaire now, you know, so you can do it, bullshit. And then Don Lemon goes, you know, I thought I might get in trouble for this, but I was telling them we should stop trying to say that so much. You're right. I like yours. He was like, shut up. That's your whole career. You've made your whole career out of being a little race baiter. You have used the color of your skin exclusively. If Don Lemon wasn't black, he would be nobody. You know, he's only who he is because he's used his skin color to attack anybody who disagrees with him. And he's one of those guys that will, like, kick people off, shut them down, won't talk to them if they dare disagree with him. I just think he's the worst kind of thing.
I think he would work at an upscale gay men's clothing store, right, had it not been getting a job at CNN. And he'd be the guy that was really, really a dick to everybody. Right. You know?
So he wouldn't even be out on the floor. They would put him like he's the guy that you have to deal with at returns. Or
he's and like then the he guy would hate that because he felt. You
know, he kind of roams near the cologne.
He would feel like he's above all of that.
Right.
Donald Lemon.
Yeah, man, yeah. He'd work at like Dillard's. That's not, yeah, that's, he'd be not a Dillard's guy. That's not an upscale clothing store, but that's just, I think that's what Don Lemon would be like. He would have been one of those guys that you're like, well, how in the world does he dress so nice and have like all this expensive stuff when he's worked for Dillard's for 15 years? You know, there's people like that. And I think that you're probably just people that come from wealth or people that manage their money really well. But I don't know if you can manage your money really well and also buy. But I had a couple friends that when I was in high school, they worked at Dillard's. And there was always a guy there, like a guy that worked there for like 20 years. And he dressed immaculately and had a really nice car. And we're like, really? How do you make that much money working at Dillard's? And maybe they pay more than I think. But
did you ever see where he lived?
No, maybe he lived in the car. Maybe
he lived in a little Lindsay apartment.
Probably. Well, with that detour down nowhere street, it's probably time to call this to a close. But even though my brother, who was the one who gave me the advice, told me not to do this, I'm just going to, you know, next time we do our next podcast, we're going to more probably be kind of oriented on getting on certain subjects. And we're going to kind of have a format where I do some research on a story. Maggie Dave does some research on a story, and we try to get a little bit more into certain things instead of just kind of talking. But this is something that we're feeling out, and we're trying to kind of get comfortable so that we're to the point where we're not having to think so much about the little things and just focusing on getting all the great information to all the wonderful folks out there that are listening. And if any of you out there that are listening aren't related to me, thank you. That's amazing. It really amazes me. The few fans that we have, I really appreciate. And for Glenn Keck and Maggie Dave, we'd like to say good night, America.
And good luck.
And I will see you soon.